The Beautifully Bear podcast contains explicit material and language that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to the Beautifully Bear podcast. I'm Shelby Coughlin, the owner and founder of Beautifully Bear, and I'm so excited to be here tonight. Welcome, Brittany, our special guest, and Rachel.
Hey.
Hello. Tonight's topic is all about divorce, and we have several different perspectives to bring you. I'm super excited about it. As most of you know, if you've been listening to the podcast, I have had some big life changes that I have not been able to talk to you guys about, and by tonight's episode title, well, here, cat's out of the bag. I'm just really excited to be able to share my story and my truth with you guys and to kind of shed some light on a topic that seems to be really frowned upon and hard for people to talk about. And I think being able to open up with you and just share a bit of my story as well as the lovely ladies I'm joined with, it'll help you guys on your journeys as well.
Yeah, get a little bites of, you know, insight, different views. Yeah.
So in my particular divorce situation, I was the person who filed for divorce. So my perspective that I'm going to be bringing to you tonight is from the person who left.
And mine's directly the opposite. So I was the person who got told they were getting a divorce. So I will have a little bit more of the perspective of navigating the unexpected aspect of the divorce.
And I have never been divorced, but I...
Congratulations.
I guess. I don't know. But my parents got a divorce after like 24 years of marriage. So I got a perspective about being the kid stuck in an unhappy marriage and then having my parents get a divorce.
I think it's super interesting too. Honestly, for me as well, having a kid going through divorce, being able to hear your insight on this, we haven't really even talked about this off the podcast much, to be able to kind of wrap my head around how my kid's going to feel about it in some way.
I mean, there really is so many layers and aspects to divorces, whether you're the person doing it or having a kid or being the kid or sharing your dog. There's a lot of different aspects that we will attempt to cover in a short amount of time.
Oh man, sharing the dog. That's a tough one.
It was tough.
I mean, I'm just saying it sounds
tough. Rachel's like, screw the rest of it, but sharing the dog is really the piece for me that I'm just not willing to do.
We all have boundaries here.
I'm so glad that you have your boundaries on that. That makes me very happy for you.
Well, we definitely have some wonderful questions.
Yes.
So are you ladies ready to dive on in?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first one, how did you navigate the decision to pursue your divorce? And what were some of the factors that influenced your choice to do so?
Wow. Well, for me, the decision didn't come just overnight. It was a series of events that led up to that decision. And I mean, if I go back, especially going back and talking to my therapist, as you all know, I've been in therapy for a couple years now. Absolutely love her. She's the best on the planet. But even talking to her in the few months before leading up to like my final decision, she said, "You were already making this decision years before you made this decision, just based on the way you spoke about your marriage, the way that you tried to navigate staying in your marriage, you showed all of the signs of someone who was ready to walk." The biggest influence, I think, for me was I didn't want my daughter to see me being ran over and seeing me in my unhappiest state. And her thinking that that's the life that she should choose for herself. And that was really hard to come to, because in my mind, I made it up that if she didn't have both of her parents in her life, if both of her parents weren't married, something was wrong with her family dynamic. And I can remember specifically there was a situation where she got involved. Her feelings were massively hurt. And I thought, this is how he treats me. Mm. And this is not how I want my daughter treated. And I don't want her to think that this is okay. And one of the last questions that I asked myself the night that I left was, would I tell my daughter to stay if the role was reversed? If I was sitting on the other side of that phone listening to everything that was going on, would I tell her to stay in that house and stay in that marriage? And the answer was very clear to me that I would tell her to walk despite everything. And so that was my final decision.
And that's pretty heartbreaking when you have that realization, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But also an important perspective to make because you are one of the biggest role models in your daughter's life. So if you are making choices that you wouldn't want her to make, it's a hard, hard path to cross at that point.
It was very hard.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it, though. You really painted it in a sense of like somebody that you care about.
Yeah. And for me, and this is kind of how I look at life in general, right? Like the way I speak to myself, would I speak to a friend this way? The way I speak to myself, would I want my daughter to speak to herself this way? And that is a new new realization for me, really, because I struggled with that for a long time. And that's what kept me. That's what made me stay was I was in my mind being selfless by staying. Mm. Oh, I'm making the right decision by staying. In reality, I think a lot of it was I was making the easy decision to stay when I should have really been considering more factors, which I don't beat myself up for now. I think in the beginning of leaving, I beat myself up over it. Why did you do this? You stopped being selfless. You stopped caring. But it really wasn't that. I think the thing was is I cared more about my daughter and myself because in order for me to truly care about her, I had to care about myself. And I think that was something that I had to come to. And it took a long time for me to come to within myself wrestling with the decision of leaving. And in the night that I left, it came down to one last fight for me. This was it. I'm never going to be talked to this way again. I'm never going to experience this again in this capacity. I don't want to be married to someone who thinks this is okay to speak to me this way because I don't want my daughter to think that she can be married to someone who speaks to her this way. And I'll never forget loading my car up. It was like 2:00 in the morning. I did one last walkthrough of my house. Everything that was we built together, everything that I ever wanted materialistically, like
from the outside looking in.
From the outside looking in, I had the car, I had the furniture, I had the decorations, I curated this perfect life, lived in the neighborhood I always dreamt of living in the city I always dreamt of living in. And on paper, it seemed perfect. But the reality was I would have rather lived in a box. Then stayed in what looked perfect from the outside in.
Well, I'm very proud of you.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, when you can say that out loud of, you know, I had everything in life that I technically wanted and built and worked for, and knowing that you had to love yourself enough to walk away from that is very hard to do. And a lot of people don't realize the strength that actually takes.
Throwing in the towel took way more effort than staying.
Yeah, you had to listen to your heart and actually hear it. That's huge. So my question, and you kind of answered it. It was, how did you know it was time to leave? But it sounds like that was pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I answered your question already.
No, it's fine. No, it's totally fine. Now I would ask Brittany that, but.
Well, I guess I technically also was the one who left. Oh my goodness. I technically also was the one to leave. I left my house as well, and he stayed in the house even though he was divorcing me. And technically, I didn't have to leave the house at the point that I did. I could have stayed in the house longer. I could have stayed there through the actual divorce process. I think what pushed me to leave is watching how much his personality changed once he made the decision that he wanted a divorce. There was plenty of fights to be had in our marriage, plenty of arguments, disagreements, sleeping in the guest room, but there was always conversation about it. And even if we didn't come to any sort of conclusion, there was still a conversation and behavior that reflected love in some aspect. But once the word divorce came out of his mouth, it was like he flipped a switch and started doing and acting and saying things to me that he had never really done before. And I tolerated that for about 11 days.
Yeah.
And then I packed up all my stuff in 24 hours when he was out of town in a U-Haul.
Hell yeah.
I got out.
Hell yeah.
So I guess that was kind of, for me, there was a straight personality flip. And I knew at that point that there was no coming back for him. So there was no point in me staying.
Yeah. His mask was gone.
I can relate to there being a personality change as well. At first, he was very loving, very, I want to get back with you. I want to save the family. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to go to therapy. I'll beg. It was like a begging stage. It did not last. I mean, maybe 2 weeks. And then once he realized that my decision was still remaining the same and that that was not happening for me, like there was not going to be any more love bombing or gaslighting to bring me back into the situation, he turned into a very cold person towards me. And like he'd been cold towards me in the past, but this was like a new level that we had reached.
It was just different, like just mean. Yeah. Like there's no really other way to describe it. And this is a time that I wish I could get a male perspective because I've heard this before. It's how just mean and not necessarily angry, like there is anger, but there's just a projection of being unkind that come from men from in a divorce. You know, women are typically stereotyped as the more emotional and care a little bit more, or are the ones upset or trying to stay or whatever. And men just get mean from a lot of the people I've talked to.
Yeah. I feel like from the majority of people I've talked to, it's they either get mean or they just shut off everything, which is almost just as painful as being a complete dick, because then you're like,
I would rather have some sort of conversation, like yell at me or something.
Yell at me or something.
Like, at least there's something there, like some emotion. But, you know, I guess that goes along. Maybe they just have to hate us in order to try to accept the situation.
Maybe that's part of their grief.
To shut off the emotional side of it.
Coping mechanism. Yeah.
I could see that. What were the biggest challenges you faced during the divorce process, and how did you overcome them?
Ooh, this is a deep question.
Jeez. So
what type of challenges are we talking here? Mental challenges, physical challenges?
The biggest ones.
What emotional. I think the biggest challenge for me is a little bit of all of those tied into one, because I had only been married for 2 years. But during that time, I had made a lot of life plans. You know, you get married, you discuss what your future looks like, especially that early on in a marriage, you know, there is, or any relationship, there is some sort of future that is discussed and there's a vision that you can see. And the marriage took away my future relationship, the current family that I had that I lost, the potential of a future family that I thought about, the life that I had built with him, and the future life that I had envisioned. So I think that was the biggest obstacle, is realizing that what I had built in my head was literally just built in my head. All those things were still future. They were imaginary. So even though I had thought about them a lot and, you know, discussed them, goals can change all the time. Plans can change. Everything can change in a matter of a few months. But I would say that's the biggest challenge, is just seeing where I had set myself in 5-10 years from now and having to sit down and look at those goals and realize that they are different and also make new ones.
Yeah. I love that. I can agree with that. Even being married for 9 years, I feel like there was such a loss in that because we did build so much together. And then there was so much to be built that was still on like the bucket list of goals we had together. And just to feel like I washed away such a large portion of my life, that was hard.
It's almost like it is a sense of loss, mm-hmm. because you're right. You spend all this time, especially for you, I mean, almost 10 years building towards something or a goal for the future. And then all of a sudden that goal is not there anymore. And you get this sense of lost and wasted time.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a mental barrier to overcome.
Mm-hmm. That's been the biggest barrier I think I've had to overcome through all of it, was just recognizing that it wasn't necessarily wasted time. I learned so much through that. I have come out and realized that I don't want to settle for things. I won't settle for things ever again. And even, I mean, I was just talking to my therapist about this in December, was talking about all of the wasted time. What came of that time? And she's like, well, I mean, look at you now. Would you know everything that you know now? Would you be as equipped for things now had you not gone through X, Y, Z? As much as it sucks to look at it that way, you have to.
And that's a good point. My therapist as well. Shout out to Lisa. She's the best. but that's one thing I discussed is, you know, for me, I turned 30 this year, and Rachel, don't you come at me for this.
That's fine. It's fine.
But in my head, you know, it was my first marriage, and I kind of jokingly kept saying to my therapist of like, cool, I just wasted like the last best years of my life, you know, the last of my 20s on someone who just like threw me away like I was nothing. And so I have to go into my 30th year, this new chapter of life, divorced and single, and kind of tackling a little bit of the stigma of that.
Yeah.
And one thing my therapist brought forward is, yes, you can have those thoughts, and you're right, this next chapter does look different, but think of how much you've learned and have grown through this. Mm-hmm. Do you really think that you would be entering this next year as confident, as self-aware, and grown if this wouldn't have happened to you?
Right.
And I was like, no, you're right. I probably still have some of the same bad habits and some of the things that I have worked on personally over the last 6 months. Those things would probably still be there.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a little bit of an eye-opening push for me to also just work on myself.
And for the record, the 30s are rad.
Everyone keeps telling me that the 30s are the best decade of your life.
They're pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's what everybody's told me. So I feel like I got a lot to look forward to in a couple years.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit yet.
Man, 20s were manic, but then again, I wasn't medicated. So it was.
I mean, the 20s are wild for everybody. We learn lots of life things. It's okay.
God. Yeah.
And I think it's important to note that you don't ever really learn any of your big lessons through comfortable situations your life.
You don't. You can't grow in a comfort zone.
No, you can't. I mean, you don't learn patience by having everything handed to you. You don't learn strength by, you know, laying on a cushy pillow, so to speak, of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were definitely things that were happening within my marriage that were impacting my mental health far like away from the marriage, but because of the marriage, I wasn't able to focus on those things and grow and recognize who I was as a person. I mean, I got married when I was 18 years old, 2 months after my 18th birthday. So essentially my entire adult life was made up with this other person who is quite a bit older than me. Especially at the time. And he kind of stepped in and made lots of decisions for me, and I never really got the chance as an adult to make any decisions solely on my own. And so when I left everything that I built and had basically nothing, I mean, I luckily had a great circle, was able to move in with a friend of mine, and she's amazing. Shout out to Kayla, my best friend. She's wonderful. She's been there for me every single step of the way. But to step into this new life of having a bedroom and not a house.
Well, that's a good perspective that I didn't really think about with you before, but can resonate with, is a lot of your growth has happened with him. Like, you never really got a chance to discover who you were because your entire adult life you have been with him.
Yeah.
And it's something that I kind of thought about a little bit too, is I was in school for 8 years and I kind of joked that I would go back to school anytime. It was the easiest time in life. When I stress over a test, I was like, that's the biggest stress in my life at that point. Right. Had a cafeteria to eat in every day. So I joke that I met my ex 2 months into my adult life. I met him 2 months after graduation. It was the first time that I had never had a structured setting. I had never had a real job before. So I kind of entered into my adult life of learning how to function in society with him as well. Mm-hmm. I think that I had a little bit of dysregulation coming out of the relationship because I had always lived with him and had someone to lean on and make decisions for me.
Yeah. And there's literally a part of your brain that can't thrive on its own in that state. Learning that really like fucked me up for a little while too, because I was the
codependency.
Whoa, yeah. Didn't even recognize that was happening.
You're like, I'm codependent? What?
Right?
Yeah.
Or even like noticing things like moving in with new people, you know, no longer living with my husband, no longer being married, now have roommates because, you know, we broke. We made a decision that made us broke. So
I got a roommate too. You're good.
But it made me realize how almost like timid and scared I was of what everyone else thought, especially like the people that I lived with. Like, I would apologize if I didn't do the dishes. She's like, well, you didn't make any of these dishes. Like, I don't understand why you're upset right now. I'm not upset with you. And I mean, for the first probably 3 to 5 months of living with her, we consistently had this same conversation where I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry I didn't do this or that. And she was like, you can chill the fuck out because like nobody's mad at you. But I went through 9 years of being with someone who would be mad at me for not doing things or feeling like I had to be on the edge of my seat constantly, you know, just anticipating his need, anticipating what would make him happy because I didn't want to set off a fight or set off an argument. Mm. And that's been such a challenge. I mean,
the amount of anxiety that you were probably living with all the time that probably took a little while to calm back down.
Yeah.
Although I am going to have to ask Kayla what your weird roommate habits are.
We'll have to bring her on the podcast. She can answer all the questions about me.
Although if your weird roommate habit is that you like to clean other people's dishes, then I guess you're a pretty good roommate.
Yeah. All things considered.
Yeah. I like to do the cleaning and the laundry. It's a really fun time.
So you want to come live with me?
At least you're not.
We just get a big house and live together.
Honestly, dream goals are... you guys have probably all seen Encanto, right?
Yes.
So you know how like the house, they have the big house, everybody Casita. Lives in it. Mm-hmm. And then in the center is like a gathering place where everybody hangs out. I just want that with all my friends.
Honestly, I love that.
I claim the jungle room.
Like we can each have like a little wing and then we meet in the middle with the, there's got to be a pool, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Mm. There has to be a pool.
Off topic.
I'm into it.
I'm just saying you could really afford a pool with that many people. So
yeah.
Like a commune, if you will. I would be down for a commune.
Look, that's getting real close to a cult.
Maybe we can write it off as a business expense.
I was going to say, is that what we are already?
I mean.
It's getting real close.
All right. I'm going to reel you back in. Okay. So we kind of dabbled on this a little bit, but. Did we discover any other unexpected perks or silver linings to being newly single and being divorced?
I have some weird ones.
We like weird.
Being able to like go to the store and like decide what I wanted without having to think about somebody else's thoughts or opinions on it.
Okay.
That's liberating.
It's very liberating. Mm-hmm. Or...
because you were finally putting yourself first, which I'm sure was very hard to get used to.
It still is kind of weird. I don't know at what point that phases out, but...
probably takes a while.
Yeah. Or not having to consistently text someone and tell them what I'm doing every second of every day.
Yeah.
And feeling like I'm my own person. Like I can make my own decisions, you know, like you ask me to go get drinks with you after the podcast, or you ask me to go, I don't know, to a concert next week. I could say yes or no, and I wouldn't have to basically ask permission to do that. Because that was kind of the dynamic for us, was more of a permission, not really even like, hey, you got any plans next Friday? Brittany really wants me to go to this concert with her. It would be more of like, is it okay that I do this, make this decision?
Oh, that makes me mad.
And so being able to make my own decisions was such a silver lining. Like, I could hop on a plane and go somewhere
and
if
not
I wanted
worry
to.
About the consequences, right? Which is great.
Yeah, because I think for me it was a like kind of a parent dynamic almost, and I think that stems from me being so young when it started, and that was kind of how it started. So I guess like a little bit more backstory. I got married when I was 18, but we got together when I was 16. And so
I was just a baby.
Yeah. And recognizing now, being 28 years old, looking back at that, I think, holy shit, like he really took over a parental role almost towards me. And I allowed it to happen because for me, it felt like I was honoring my husband. But in reality, I was being more controlled than honoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on a lighter side of perks, one thing I've noticed is just how much easier it is to take care of myself.
Yeah.
So a little backstory for me, we had up to 5 dogs at one point.
Holy wow.
Two of which were Great Danes. So they are messy and big and needy, and we always had a puppy in the house, and then also had a male in the house to also take care of. But I was always putting myself last. So weird enough for me is the fact that I literally wash my face every night and put on my skincare. Mm-hmm. And my house is always, it's always neat. It's never super dirty because I feel like I have enough time and energy to put into a space that I want to be nice. I just found a lot of the little things that I pushed off before were all things that were my priority. Even working out now, there's no problem for me getting to the gym because I don't have 17 other things on my to-do list, like go get dog food or go pick up this deodorant and make sure I got the right snacks for our movie night tonight. It's just having the time to take care of myself, which is a great silver lining.
That is a great silver lining.
It really is.
I feel that in my bones, making that time to be able to sit down and take care of yourself. Or I went through a period where I didn't even watch, like I used to be a TV person. Like I love TV. I love sitting down and finding a good show to watch. And I went probably a year without finding a single show that I could watch. Like it just couldn't catch my interest. I couldn't focus on it. My brain was in 1,000 directions. And after moving out and moving in with my best friend and having like this newfound life, I was able to like find shows again, which was like so random, but also it was beautiful for me because it was like, wow, I can actually shut my brain off and watch a TV show. And I couldn't do that and didn't realize like how disrupted my body was living in that space.
It's the nervous system dysregulation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not laughing at you. I'm giggling because for me, it was puzzles. And yes, I do sound like an 80-year-old grandma.
That's adorable. Kind of puzzles.
But for me, I love sitting down and having calm and doing puzzles.
Are you a Sudoku person?
Yes.
Ah! Oh, yes, I love Sudoku.
But it was just something that I don't even remember buying a puzzle in the entire time I was in that relationship because everything was just go, go, go. And my body was not ever in a calm enough state that I could sit down and enjoy trying to put puzzle pieces together because I was just too anxious about everything else that I could be doing.
Right.
And now I do 1 to 2 puzzles a week and just finished my Eiffel Tower last night.
Hell yeah.
I've never done a puzzle in my life.
What? You can come over. I just got two new Harry Potter puzzles that are 3D. So if you want to come check that out with me.
I would love to come to a puzzle
with you.
Have
you ever tried a triangle puzzle where it's all triangle shaped pieces?
That sounds terrible.
I've never done a puzzle. Exciting.
That doesn't sound like that doesn't sound like my gateway into it.
No, probably not.
That sounds about as awful as like the clear puzzles that I've seen that don't have a picture on them. They're just all clear pieces you gotta try to fit together.
Oh no, no. No. That's the things that they torture you with. No. I'm not ready for that.
I'm not ready for that. I definitely think there are silver linings, though, and you got to find them.
There are. Because
it can be such a depressing time, even making the decision. I mean, I felt like shit for the decision that I made for a hot minute. I knew it was the right decision to make. That didn't mean that it was easy or it didn't hurt like hell. So finding like those silver linings and like really holding on to them was such a saving grace.
And I think they'll keep coming too. Obviously entering a different chapter of life. This is still fairly fresh for both of us.
Yeah.
Is we're still going to keep finding the silver linings and the perks, which is a great benefit of it too.
It is.
The gift that keeps on giving.
It does.
I mean, divorce.
Hey.
Recommend for some.
We can recommend for some. We could really sell it.
I think it's a romantic idea to fall in love with yourself again, which it sounds like is what is going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little cliche, and I'm sure you've heard the saying is you really can't love anybody or anything else until you love yourself. And for the longest time, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's part of a little bit of my healing journey is finding that self-love again.
Yes.
And that's how I can fall in love with things like doing puzzles again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not actually necessarily believe that saying until I went through my divorce, because I think I was holding on so much to, oh, I can still pour from this empty cup into this marriage, until I realized I couldn't. And then I was like, who the hell am I? Mm. And what am I doing? And a huge part of that stemmed from speaking like life into women every single day, talking to these women, hearing their experiences, what they were going through. And I was like, I can't keep going down this path that I'm going, because I can't help anyone until I help myself.
Yeah.
Such a huge realization.
Well, I have a fun question. Did you ever have a divorce playlist of empowering breakup songs? And if so, what were some of your top picks? Was it Megan Thee Stallion?
I'm getting eyebrows over there from Shelby.
I heard there was some feedback from you on this.
There is a story. So I do have a divorce playlist, and my divorce playlist is called Divorce is Fun. And the top song, the first song on it, is So What by Pink.
Okay.
And if you ever take me to karaoke, I will sing it for you. 100%.
Say no more.
The song is already playing in my head as you said it. I'm like, I'm jamming over here.
But the funny part is, so this is a Spotify playlist, right? Mm-hmm. And for those of you who have Spotify, you know that you can create different albums and name them and share them, make them public, make it private. So I made this album cover a picture of me and my ex burning in a fire because I burned all our photos in my angry phase. So it's a photo of one of our engagement pictures burning in a fire pit.
And hell yeah.
I forgot
that's so metal.
That my Spotify was logged into the TV in his house.
Oh, this is fantastic.
And apparently there was an evening where he had a bunch of boys over and they were trying to play music and just hit the Spotify and looked for the playlist, and his friends found the Divorce is Fun playlist made by Britney.
Made by Britney.
And got to see our picture burning as the album.
Love that.
Well, how did you find out
about so this? Much.
Did he tell you?
He told me about it, yeah.
Was he upset?
No, he was just kind of like, thanks. You guess you got a great divorce playlist. All my friends saw it.
Nice.
And I was like, my bad. I'll probably log out of my Spotify.
Thoroughly enjoy that.
You should probably log off my shit. Thank you. I didn't necessarily have a playlist, right? Like, I didn't actually have a playlist, but I had the songs memorized in my head, and they were kind of sad. I didn't put any happy songs on there, to be honest
with
you. See,
I had to do the happy, because I did go through the phase of listening to the sad songs, which there was a lot of Taylor Swift. Do not recommend if you're trying to get yourself in a better place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and a couple Taylor Swifts on
but
there.
But you got to have some of the fun songs.
Flowers, not ooh. Miley Cyrus. Well, Miley Cyrus.
Ride in
is
solo,
version.
Jason Derulo.
Hey.
That one's on here. Picture to Burn, Taylor Swift. So that's a good Taylor Swift on there.
That should have been your first song, Picture to Burn.
But yeah, it's a beautiful background.
I love that photo.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
I'm gonna have to go make this playlist private, so not everyone can. See
no,
this.
Make it public.
Make it public. I'll just keep adding to it.
Yeah,
for all our peeps going through divorces out there, it's a bomb playlist. Check it out.
My favorite song though was "Everleave" by Alexandria Kay. It is very emotional. If you want to cry and you're going through something similar, don't listen to it, or do.
Sometimes you need those sad moments. You got to get those emotions out.
It's so good though. Like it's the lead up for me. I love music. Music like calms my soul, but she starts it off with basically saying like, I don't know that I'll ever leave. He doesn't believe that I'll ever leave. He's going to continue to treat me this way because he doesn't think that. And then like the very last lyric of the song is, and I thought I would never leave. And it's like her you know, she fucking did the shit.
Yeah, she did it.
And so that was really, it resonated with my soul. Every time I listened to it in the car, it got me in my fucking feelings. Mm. Rise Up was like a secondary favorite. And that's what I listened to, I think, on repeat the first like 2 weeks I left was Rise Up, just because I knew I had to be strong through that, because in those moments, that's when he was the nicest. That's when I would normally cave and just give right back in and be like, no, it's okay. We can fix everything. Everything's going to be great. But then we go back into the same like lovely pattern.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes when you're listening to that or reading words or hearing it from someone else, is you don't have to have 100% belief in it at the time.
Yeah.
But you still have to listen to it and try to speak that positivity in your life. I remember seeing a TikTok of some guy, and it was like Megan Thee Stallion or Cardi B or something. And he was like, they tell you to listen to happy music to try to upbeat. And then it's cut scene to the next part and it's something like that. And he's just crying, trying to sing the lyrics.
I'm sorry.
And I started laughing because I was like, this was literally me singing Jason Derulo riding solo. And I'm singing like feeling like a star, trying to like not let my voice quiver, crying through these lyrics. But I'm going to tell myself I'm going to get there.
Yes.
So next time you hear that song, just think of me ugly crying in the car.
You got it.
Oh, I will. I doubt. I'm going to listen to it on the way home. So, Rachel.
Oh, yeah.
How did your parents' divorce impact your perception of relationships and marriages as you grew up?
Oh, man. So, my parents' relationship, it didn't have a very much love in it. I only saw my parents kiss maybe like once.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't remember there being affection. They slept in different bedrooms. You know, it was very... very disconnected. And so I didn't really have a healthy example to see growing up. I remember asking mom to get a divorce from my dad when I was probably in like second or third grade.
Oh, wow.
Being like, you're miserable. Like, why?
And you could see that at that age.
Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, just get a divorce. My heart breaks
for you. My goodness.
Yeah. And like, there was this club, actually, when I was in elementary school. It was called like the Rainbow Club. And it was for all the kids whose parents got divorces. And I remember being like, I should be in this club. Like, why am I not in this club? Like, my parents should get a divorce. Like, they don't need to be together. And knowing that as a kid and like having your mom be like, no, we have to stay together because I made a promise to God. Like, you know, knowing that that's what locked her in was the feeling of obligation. It wasn't a feeling of love.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Yeah, that does suck.
Yeah. Yeah. And to have a kid recognize like, you are deeply unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can do things to change this. Like, you're an adult. You could make these changes.
Like, I can't do it for you, but...
Yeah, yeah.
And you're vocally telling her, too, that
yeah, I remember being in the van, like, driving in our neighborhood, like, having this very specific conversation with her, and it just didn't stick. And all the while, you know, verbally abusive... eventually got physically abusive, you know, a terrible, terrible individual. She deserved better. And I'm glad that she did get a divorce. Yeah. It wasn't her call, actually, either. He filed for a divorce.
Oh, wow.
That's a plot twist.
Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
Yeah, she was in it for the long haul.
How did she handle that?
That's a good question, because when I was older when it happened, and so at that point... I was exploring being an adult, you know, like 19, 18, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was more disconnected from the situation to guard myself.
Yeah.
And so, but I know she went to therapy. I know she was really sad. All the while for a little bit of tea, he had a mistress. And he actually ended up getting this mistress pregnant. So that made it exciting. And he ended up being like a 60-year-old man with like a newborn.
Oh, my, oh goodness. My
goodness. We make choices.
We do make choices. And I would imagine this has had a little bit of a reflection into your adult life, your relationships. Do you, like, looking back now, obviously I know you are happily married to a wonderful man.
Oh, he's great.
But did it ever cause you to put up any, like, harsher barriers and boundaries when it came to relationships? Was it hard for you to date or take things seriously because of what you watched your mom go through?
100%. Yeah, I did not have very serious relationships really in my adulthood that were, like sustaining, okay, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the longest relationship I had wasn't even continuant. Like, it wasn't in one span of time. Like, it was a breakup, get back together, breakup, get back together, you know, like continuously, like in a trauma cycle. So yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense, because if as a kid, even from a very young age, you were not seeing a healthy relationship, mm-hmm, and it was probably hard for you to transfer that into your own dating life.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I ended up with a kind of similar person that I kept going back to, like a very, like, you know, an entrancing individual, mm-hmm, that always had the right things to say. Mm. And, you know, like, if he felt me going the opposite direction, he would know what to do to wrap me back in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep. When you see somebody getting abused and manipulated, like a majority of your entire childhood, it definitely is easy to fall into that pattern yourself. So, and that's all the more reason why I'm proud of you, Shelby, for making a move that you did, because your sweet baby girl is, she now has an example.
Yeah.
That she can see.
It's really like a testament to I think so many people who stay for their children too, to mm-hmm, recognize that your kids are not blind to the things that are going on and your emotions and the way you're feeling. And even if you're not openly saying anything or you're not openly fighting in front of your children, I feel like energies are such a thing. And children, mm-hmm, I feel like feel them so, so much more as well. They're not caught up in the day-to-day life. They are paying more attention to the way that you're acting. And that can impact their future relationships.
Oh, yeah. And you know, like, it's funny you say that, because I do specifically have a memory where I came home from school and I had my backpack on, you know, and I walk in and I'm hearing like crashing noises and like yelling, and I come into the dining room and I realize that it's my parents in the back room, and I'm sitting in the dining room and I'm just like, I start yelling, like, I can hear you. Like, I can hear you. I know what you're doing. Like, and you know,
that's so traumatizing.
Extremely, yeah.
I'm sorry you had to go through that.
That's, yeah, it's a lot to be a kid. And so, you know, like, yeah, hearing the fights, seeing the fights, or even knowing that there's an odd energy in the house, mm-hmm, like, they pick up on it for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad they finally chose, well, not together chose to have a divorce, but I think
I'm so glad my dad filed for divorce, because my mom was not going to do it. Her nah, she wasn't going to do it. Despite it all, she wasn't going to do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the weight that must have been on her shoulders too, to feel that obligation to, mm-hmm, stay.
Yeah. Yep.
And as long as she stayed too. I mean, and it goes by so fast. Like, your life goes by so fast. And to look back at 20, you said 24 years?
Yeah.
To look back at 24 years of that and,
yeah,
just realize you stayed out of obligation, not out of love.
And, you know, they were kind of high school sweethearts, actually. So they got the good growing up phase. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the best phase, let me just tell you.
No. Yeah. No.
I hear the 30s are going to be the best.
Oh my God. They're so great.
I'm really looking forward to them, honestly.
All right. This is a good segue. So, how did the experience of divorce in all aspects, obviously, contribute and impact to your mental health, your emotional well-being, and what strategies has everyone found helpful for self-care to navigate that?
Therapy, number one. Therapy. Let's just... without my therapist, I don't know that I would have been able to navigate everything as well as I did. I think that it was really important to have that third party who was not vested in my life, who wasn't a friend, who didn't see the things happen right in front of their face, who could listen to me talk and actually like hear me out what I was feeling, what I was going through. And being able to do that and being open and honest and vulnerable with her and recognizing the pieces in which I played of staying and allowing the behavior to continue really helped me and my mental health to grow and get better.
Well, I think just having that third party to talk to, someone who is indifferent to the situation, they're not on either side or the other, because whether you realize it or not, anyone else in your life, whether it's a friend or a family member or an acquaintance, coworker, everyone has some sort of bias in one direction or the other, whether that's in your personal situation or something they experience. Mm-hmm. So having that third party just to get those thoughts worked through in your head is wonderful.
And they're not looking at it from an emotional standpoint, which is where everybody else in your life is typically going to look at it from.
They know way too much to have a, you know, an objective opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think along with the therapy, one of the other big things I did was just start writing, whether it was a journal, whether it was just little post-its. I felt that I had carried so many things for so long, whether that was the lack of self-love for myself, things that I felt I did wrong in my marriage, things that I felt he did wrong in our marriage. Getting it out was very freeing and very helpful. Big proponent of journaling.
I love journaling. Yeah. That's helped me a lot. I actually thought about this earlier when you were talking about the puzzles, because I stopped journaling for years. And in the beginning of our relationship, that was one thing that I did all the time. And I recognized slowly, like, I couldn't write it down because it was too painful to write down.
Mm. And you don't realize how much of yourself you lose. So same thing for me is I quit journaling. I used to write all the time, like even little short stories. I just like to write. But it was when you got caught up with your partner and the life that you were building and all these things and the anxiety and everything else, is you forget to do the things that you like and to take care of yourself.
Yeah, you really kind of lose who you are. You start to become a shell of that person.
Well, I think that is a great round of questions to begin wrapping up this first half of this two-part series on divorce.
Yes. Yeah,
agreed.
Don't forget to come back next week and check us out. We've got some real juicy questions for next episode.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Beautifully Bare podcast.
Bye.
Bye.